answer to cutting through and building trust isn't found in a sea of management jargon. It's in these three words. I'm Ron Tite, the author of Think, Do, Say: How to Seize Attention and Build Trust in a Busy, Busy World.
You talking loud, but saying nothing. You talking loud, but saying nothing. You talking loud, but saying nothing. Cutting through the static, rise above the noise. Don't you just love it when the people hear your voice?
What makes a great leader and what makes a great organization is really based on what they think, what they do, and what they say. Now, luckily, I got to sit down and chat with a few great leaders myself. Here's my conversation with my friend Matt Vasili. He's the creator and president of Fidel Gastro's, Toronto's first street food experience company. The idea is brilliant and the execution is even better. We had a chance to talk about his role as an influencer, even though he doesn't really like where that word has gone. We also had a chance to talk about his experience with Red Bull directly. Here's what he had to say. So you get approached by Red Bull. How, where, when, like, what, how does that go down?
So in the washroom at my old restaurant, you would notice if you would walk down the stairs, the first washroom on the right, because they were all individually stalled, there would be in the top left corner always a signature: Red Bull intern 2016, Red Bull intern 2017, Red Bull intern 20. So it was actually, we had like a list of all the Red Bull interns always coming into our place. And I felt like somehow our restaurant, Lisa Marie, may she rest in peace, was almost like a goodbye place for anyone that had survived the Red Bull intern kind of thing. So at some point, I caught wind of this. I thought it was super interesting. There might have been an email exchange at some point in all this. Hey, you know what? I've noticed your interns come here often. So I just want to say a big thank you. And they were like, well, you know, like we send them there or they go there for a reason. It's become tradition, but there's an energy in your place that just matches the energy that we try and create. And they were like, so you came up, your food truck came up in a meeting. We'd love to have you do something like an event with us, and then we'd love to film it. And I was like, well, you know, I love the stuff you do. I love the content you do. I love the ideas you put out there. There's one problem. I can't drink your product anymore. The last time I had it, I almost like jumped through my food truck. Like I was on no sleep for like 2 or 3 days, and it was my first time ever doing the food truck in a public service. It was like at Bay in Front. It was hot. It was like 500 people. There was a camera crew in my face the whole time. So I was like, ever since that day, I'm not saying it's your product. I'm saying there was a combination of life factors, but I haven't had it since. I've been 5 years clean, and they were like, we don't care. There's an energy. It has nothing to do with you drinking the product or endorsing the product or not. There's an attitude that you have that aligns with ours. And I think brand alignment is so key across the board. Like, I've always been a big fan of collaboration over competition. And I think when, especially in food, that's such a weird concept because everyone sees everyone as a competitor or as someone who's taking dollars from you. And it's like, don't you understand? If the entire block is doing well, then that's a good thing. So I think the collaborative part, I've always looked at brands that have, you know, similar values, similar energy, similar look and feel, similar demos. And I guess they felt the same way. We didn't end up doing anything together, but I thought the catalyst for that conversation was kind of interesting.
How did that make you feel when they said, like, because you're a former ad guy, where it's typically like, we need the bite and smile. Can you look to the camera and turn the label out? And like, how did that make you feel when they said you don't need to drink the product?
I think it was actually pretty indicative of just how the, and you stop me if I'm wrong, if the ad industry is changing its mentality. And I think it is more about awareness than consumption now sometimes. And it's almost like, I remember the first time I ever saw branded content, Guy Ritchie was directing these 45-second BMW
films.
Yeah. And I was just like, you don't even realize it's a car ad. But, and this was, I'm talking like 15 years ago.
One of them shot by Brown Entertainment of Toronto, Ontario, Canada.
Oh, my goodness.
William Craner, that's a shout out to you.
Oh my goodness, look at that. Yeah. Look at that. So, I mean, I think the fact that I didn't drink the Kool-Aid wasn't a big deal because they know other people will, and they're not relying. They're just looking on. We need to constantly be. Everyone's got ADD. We need to constantly bombard people with messaging.
Yeah. Now, what do you use the term influencer for you?
I do not.
You do not. And why not? I'm just curious.
I think first off, it's a weird title. I think there's a lot of people that have had influence in my life. I never called my nonno an influencer. You know what I mean? Like, I think it's a huge honor to have an opinion that influences other people's decisions across the board. But just like in Spider-Man, when they say, you know, that's a big responsibility. And with that responsibility, you need to be aware of the things that you put out there and the things that you endorse and the things that you say, because if you actually are influential, you need to be very mindful of that.
Right.
I think in my experience, what I have seen, I feel like people are just using their influential reach to endorse anything.
Right.
And it's like, would you still be saying this with or without a paycheck?
Yeah.
You know, so I really shy away from the word influencer a lot. In fact, I correct people when they say it.
Yeah.
But I think there's a natural influence that I have over people. And then other people hear me talk and they go, I'm going to not do it because that idiot said it's great. So
right.
I think influence can go in two directions.
Yeah.
And that's the thing that influencers don't realize, that you can now create the polar opposite. I think one of the Jenner kids, remember when she did that Pepsi commercial, people were just like, not going to happen. But I just did a huge digital campaign with Chevrolet trucks, and
that's when you're in Halifax.
Yeah, I was in Halifax and everything. And
Alberta before that, right?
Is Alberta, Halifax, Toronto. And then there was a Montreal episode, but they got a Montreal chef to do it. And what was great about it was Chevy was into us as a brand. And I've loved pickup trucks.
Yeah.
And
You have a pickup truck. Yeah.
And now I drive, whenever I get a chance, the Chevy gives me a Silverado to play around with. And I love it, right?
Because
it's very functional for me as someone who's schlepping things all day, every day. Pickup trucks are kind of like business in the back, party in the front. Like, they're super nice inside.
It's the mullet of vehicles,
basically, right? But it's true, though, because it's like they're very refined, very city-esque inside the vehicle. And then the back is just pure utility. And that's exactly what I need for a living. So pickup trucks have always been a huge part of my thing. But they approached me to do a branded digital series. And we came up with this idea called Truck to Table, where I see myself as this conduit or bridge between chefs and farmers, and kind of telling that story of the journey of your food and how it starts
awesome
at a farm and ends up on a plate and everything in between. And for the most part, like 98% of people were like, this is such a great story, you know. And then once in a while you get someone that says, how dare you? I figure that's what they sound like on the other end. How dare you?
The grandfather and Simpsons.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Endorse Chevy and trucks and farms. It's like, you know, and I'm like, listen, think of it this way. No matter what, this is an important story to tell. People have never been so disconnected from fact and fiction when it comes to food. And I'm not an expert, but I know I'm not an expert. So I go out and I try and learn as much as possible. So that way, when I am in a situation of influence, I can tell them, like, listen, I know what you think might be accurate. Unfortunately, these are actually how it's done. But there's always a debate as to, you know, how you then take that information and understand it across the board.
Yeah.
But so I said to this person, I'm like, listen, the conversation of food and farming and restaurants needs to be told. People need to know this. How much work it takes. Like, do you like oysters? Are you a fan of oysters?
Yeah,
okay. If I told you it took 5 years for an oyster to hit the table in front of you, would you believe me?
No, I would have guessed 5 weeks.
Yeah, like it is a 5-year process, 3 to 5 years to cultivate and properly grow an oyster farm.
Yeah.
And it's like people do not understand how much time and effort and work and labor and passion go into that. And then we just get buck a shuck at our local spot. It's nothing.
Oyster boy.
And they're just popping oysters back. So I'm like, listen, this story needs to be told no matter what. Thankfully, a brand that I align myself with also thinks that this story needs to be told. And they said, let's tell it together.
Yeah.
What's so bad about that?
Yeah, that's amazing. That's amazing. I've always loved your transparency around that. Like, I think, because I take a very similar approach in the book, where I say, like, on one hand, the notion of influencer has always been around. We will always have influence. We will always have people who influence our
opinions. Celebrity endorsement was that.
Yeah. But that the notion of the traditional influencer thing is like one of the biggest scams in marketing to come along. But on the other hand, it's like when somebody has influence, is completely transparent about it. Like, I don't even think, I think it's okay to even like, I don't use the brand, but I totally respect the brand.
Totally.
Like, you know.
Yeah, I think that's, the message is almost lost. If you feel like you have to, like wearing those NASCAR jackets where it's like every brand that I work with is sewn on my jacket. It's a part of my life. It's like, no, it's like there's a certain amount of alignment and I can relate to that alignment. And if there's a story to be told together, then let's tell it together.
Yeah.
You know, like it's true though. Like you've nailed it.
So, and not to put you on the spot because not to copyright the line, even though you were a copywriter, so pressure's on.
Pressure's on.
Because most people would say, I believe that my restaurant should be the best restaurant in Toronto or whatever, right? But what that does is like, oh, well, then you could never do anything but a restaurant.
A restaurant, it's true.
So do you think that way or could you think that? Like what was your belief that went beyond a restaurant?
So amazing question. Two moments in life very distinctly answer it. So I remember working as a copywriter for Glen Hunt at Dentsu. I was an intern there, becoming a junior copywriter, and you weren't allowed to get on the actual website of people until you actually were part of the company.
Right.
So when he hired me on, I saw everyone's bios and everyone got to say a little something about them, whether it was, you know, inspirational or clever or just goofy. I was like, you know, I wrote one for myself and I was like, this sounds like something I should be saying, but doesn't sound like me. So I'm like, I'm just going to delete it. And then I just wrote the words, I want to create something today that other people will try to recreate tomorrow. And he was like, boom, right? Like, because, you know, imitations, flattering, all that stuff. And I started to see that happen a lot when I was getting started in food because I was doing things so different. Fast forward years later, Kai, my better half, who's much smarter than I am, she was like, you know, this is in our very, very early days together. She's like, what do you want to accomplish? And my big dream then was to open up one sandwich place called Fidel Gastro's.
Right.
She's like, so you mean to tell me you have uprooted your entire life? I'm following you down this path. You're doing all this work to open up one sandwich spot? That seems like you are not seeing the big picture at all. And she was so right. You know. So my answer today is, I just want to be different. And I want to make noise by being different in this industry because the industry itself is so steeped in tradition. And if that can be my point of difference, I know I'll never be the best chef. I'll know I'll never open up a number one restaurant in Canada. That's not my purpose in food. My purpose in food is to kind of disrupt how things have been doing, have a lot of fun doing it, connect with people through food, and really bring down that, like, we take ourselves so seriously sometimes. Like, let's just have a little fun. So I think that's always been my reason for being in this industry is it allows me to be myself every day at work. If money was not an option, they'd be like, what do you want to do tomorrow? I'd be like, I'd love to cook for people.
Yeah.
I would really, really like just come on over.
Yeah.
And we'll have a little mini party in the backyard with a barbecue. Like, that's really all I love to do.
Yeah.
I love to connect ideas. I love to connect people, kind of like yourself. But it's like food just happens to be my canvas, not a 30-second spot.
So there's a bunch of stuff I love about that. One, I love that line that I want to create something other people recreate because it reinforces that you want to be out in front. The second thing I love, the entire foundation is in the joy of simply cooking, right? That the method of delivery and the business model and everything else is the thing that you hope others recreate. So was that the thing then? Because if you say that, I want to do things that other people recreate, and then you look at your portfolio of work and you go, food truck, one of the first to do that in this space, got that. The brand evangelist, you know, or whatever term, brand partner.
God bless.
That just sounded like a Catucciism right there. Like, right? Thank you, God bless.
Thank you, God bless, evangelism brand.
But that's it. But you've done it in a really interesting and compelling and different way.
Yeah, for sure. It's been a part of our business model. People are like, how do you make money off Instagram? I'm like, well, like so.
Yeah. But was that the point, though, that you look at the portfolio and you go, the restaurant is actually us recreating what other people have done.
Yeah, I think you nailed it. But the restaurant allowed my... I loved having a restaurant. And I would never, ever have changed my trajectory.
Right.
In fact, all those things you just discussed, having the restaurant made me a better version of that.
Yep.
Made me a better chef. Made me a better boss, a better communicator, a better leader, a better collaborator. All the things that I needed to make the other parts of the business more successful came from the hard knock life of owning that restaurant. But within that, we did a lot of things, even in that space, that were different. You know, we constantly redid our menu, probably 4 times a year, because I was getting bored.
Yeah.
If things felt like they were just happening, I felt the need to like shape it up and change it. And we would constantly hold one-off events and collaborations with other chefs. And we would use it as a rock venue sometimes. And I was coming up with always looking for new ways to engage the space. I think the way I defined it when we first opened was Lisa Marie was the brick and mortar restaurant with the heart of a pop-up.
Yep.
But you're not wrong, because 6 years later, which is an incredibly long time to own a restaurant, I was...
Not to mention an agency.
Yeah. How did we not merge? Seriously. I think that's what this is all about. We've merged right now. But I was good. Like, everyone's like, you know, why? Why did you... I got around, and I'm not exaggerating, around 3,000 messages from people. All being like, we're so proud of you. I might get emotional.
Yeah.
We're so proud of you, but why did you do it? Like, why did you start it, or why did you sell it? Why'd you take it away from everyone?
Right.
And I was like, you know what? I've put my entire life into this. I need to take a little bit of my life back.
Yeah.
And I'm so honored that so many people had so many memories here. Like, I helped a dude propose to his wife in one of our bingo nights. Like, you know, we did weekly bingo, right? So guy comes in, he's all nervous. It's like an hour before we open. He goes, we come all the time. You might not recognize us. I used to host bingo too when we first opened. Because I got nothing better to do than host a couple hours of bingo on
a
Tuesday.
N42.
So he's like, listen, I want to propose to my girlfriend tonight. Can you rig a game of bingo? And the prize will be the ring. And I'll come up and I'll propose. And we did it flawlessly. She was floored. People were losing their shit.
Wow.
You know, here we are, last weekend of service. They're sitting at table 100. Their baby is now on the table. And they're looking at me like, you've just taken away a huge part of our relationship. And that crushed me.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, that crushed me. The business side of the decision to sell Lisa Marie made all the sense in the world.
Yeah.
The emotional side was the hardest thing ever. Like, I was not prepared for that.
Right.
Kai was not prepared for that. We actually both thought that we had run the course, that we were already becoming a little stagnant. Yep. And when we told people, or that when we announced it on, we used Instagram as the place to do it. Because I was contemplating, I'm like, do I go to BlogTO? Do I go to Toronto Life with it? And I was like, you know what? Our story, our community, I'm telling it.
Yeah.
And then that's the other thing too. Like, CBC Radio had me on afterwards to talk about it. And City TV News came by and did a live feed from our last service.
Yeah.
And I was like, this happens quite often. Like, why are you guys, like, is it a slow news day? Like, what's going on? And they were like, people just seem to care more. And it has nothing to do with, I mean, it might have something to do with our food. It might have something to do with our brunches or whatever. I think it was the story that we created, the community we built. And people felt like I was taking that away from them a bit.
Yeah.
So that was really tough. But I George Costanza'd it. We ended on a high note.
Yeah, yeah, totally. Well, I think... if we track it to your belief, I believe we want to create something other people will recreate. And then what actions do you take to reinforce that belief? You know, if you look at the key line from what I think was the best one-off ad of the year, believe in something even if it means sacrificing everything.
Right.
Which was the Colin Kaepernick Nike ad.
Huge.
And so that's what you did. You believed in something to the point that you're like, I'm going to shut this down when it's at its peak or near it, whatever.
Totally.
Things are going very well, and I'm going to do it. I'm going to sacrifice everything because there was so much identity wrapped up in that.
Totally.
And I think what, to somebody who is both a fan and a friend, I think what you'll see as a result is that this is now people going, I wonder what he's going to do next.
Sure.
And they'll hop onto that.
Right.
and then till somebody recreates that. And then you're like, and now I'm going on to the next
thing. Totally.
And then you end up with this, you know, launch and pivot and launch and pivot and launch and pivot. And I think it says a lot where what most people do is I'm going to launch this thing and then it's making a lot of money. So I'm just going to personally step away and do the thing that I love to do.
Sure.
Instead, I'm going to shut this down instead of just giving it to a general manager and having it lose its soul.
Right.
Well,
pivot's such a big word though. Like it became our word of the year. How did you explain to people what I was about to do in one word? And that was exactly it. We were going to take our energy and pivot it elsewhere. And that's all it was.
Right. So we have your belief. We know that you behave in a way that reinforces that belief. What did you think is the key way to talk about that?
Honestly.
Yeah.
No, I'm saying honestly, that is the way to do it. I think why put all that work into something and then tell a different version of that story, like a glamorized version of the story. Like it just doesn't do anyone any favor, especially if people, if you are someone of influence and people now want to follow a similar trajectory and they go, but it didn't work the same way. And it's like, well, because it actually didn't happen that way maybe. And so I think, you know, being transparent is a huge thing. And I've had a lot of great opportunities to do a little bit of consulting work since selling Lisa Marie, and trying to get people to adopt transparency is big, right?
Yeah.
Like understanding it's like, no, like let people see what it is, the struggles and the triumphs and everything in between, because the journey is what people are interested in. You know, if that something comes out polished and ready to go, people care less.
Right.
Because
right.
you're like, okay, you were just given that, you know?
Yeah.
So I think the transparency is so key to that. So first off, you know, thank you for saying all the very nice things you've just said, because I've always looked up to you. I think you're not only a genius, but you're incredibly funny, and I can relate to a lot of your beliefs professionally and personally. So to hear you say these things about me, it's quite humbling. And if I can now do similar things that you're doing, where it's like whenever someone does reach out to me, I'm happy to sit there and give them the reasons why they should or should not do something.
Yeah.
There's been a few times where people have been like, I want to open a food truck. I'm like, maybe you shouldn't.
Yeah.
Or maybe you should work on a food truck first and make sure you really want to do this, because you've seen very glamorized versions of this. And I'd like to say, myself included, being on TV with a truck can seem glamorous. And, you know, I don't know that is everyone's path. And I got really lucky.
Yeah.
Right time, right place. And I work hard. Like those are the kind of the things that happen. But so I'm just always very honest with people. And then someone will come around that's super talented. And I'm just like, why are you not doing more of this? Like, this is your thing. Like you are so great. So
yeah. If I can give you one piece of advice, it's that, cause I get a lot of like, can we meet for a coffee? I'd love to pick your brain. And what I love is Jeffrey Gittimer's line. Have I ever told you that? Like,
no.
Jeffrey Gittimer, who's like, the people who say, can I take you to lunch? I'd love to pick your brain. And I respond with, I'm $5,000 an hour. Lunch is on me. But
I like that.
Because I get a lot of the like, can I meet you for a coffee? Or can you meet my friend who's looking for a thing? And so I set aside one day a month. And only one day a month.
Wow. Oh, now that I know this, I'm going to book 4 coffees with you.
Today's the
day.
Today's the day. So I had to move a bunch of stuff around.
Yeah.
I just literally do 8. Go back to back to back to back
good
to back.
For you.
If you can fit in that schedule, then great. Know that I may have to cancel because of other stuff. Because I was finding it was like every day it was like, oh, I got to go meet a thing. And in the middle of the day, and I, you know, couldn't do stuff. And then
I base it on a lot of times, like I do a little bit of research on the people before I even respond.
Yeah.
And it's like, as somebody who I'd like to think I've worked for everything that I've achieved, and Kai's worked for everything that she's achieved, like someone in a similar position starting out, like I'm happy to give them that extra time. But like if a hotel group is like, we want to pick your brain, I'm like, that's when the
rate
card comes out, right?
Totally.
Because
That's where it's the, let me introduce you to Sundance.
Yeah, exactly. She can help you out. Like, that's,
and you're like, oh,
there's someone in between. It's like, yeah, but I think there's value in, like, but then there's the other side, the people that only have pull the rate card model.
Yeah.
And I think that can be really disheartening for people who are starting off, because you're like, well, you have the keys and I can't afford them.
Right. So how we define, we may have talked about this, how we define kind of innovation and kind of new and interesting projects is we call it either assembly line or concept car. So in the automotive world, where they make their money is on the assembly line.
Right.
That's where they make their money. Because
that's everybody, the numbers. Yeah.
Everybody has a very specific job. They know exactly what to do. It's repeatable behavior every single time. You guarantee cost, you guarantee quality, you guarantee margin, and you make your money. And it scales really quickly, and that's where you make your cash. Now, when you want to innovate and try something new, what they do is they build a concept car.
Right.
And so the concept car is off the assembly line. You don't mess with the assembly line. It's a small group of people. Sure. You just try it out, do it to do it. And then over time, you're like, we can take this gas cap that we discovered on the concept car and we can plug it into the assembly line without disruption. And so then over time, the assembly line innovates responsibly. Right. So given your model of always being out in front, always developing concept cars, where's your assembly line? Like, where do you make... And I'm not trying to pry into your business model.
100%.
But what is the point where you're like, we're moving this on the assembly line.
Sure.
And that's going to make the money so that we can try stuff out and embrace failure and, you know, redefine the world and all that. So how do you balance those two things?
Well, actually, believe it or not, you taught me a very valuable lesson about 3 years ago. You said, I worry about the tomorrows so my staff can worry about the todays.
Mm-hmm.
And I think the concept of having, first off, a team of people that are competent and believe in what you believe and all the things that we've said up to this point, if they're working for you and don't believe in these things, like, then they're probably not going to stick around for very long.
Right.
So that is the first thing, is you need to have a solid foundation of people around you. It doesn't have to be a big team. In fact, I find as soon as you get bigger, you start, especially in food, you're just kind of filling holes versus structurally growing a team. So I have some amazing people that work around me. Their job is to constantly question my ideas, test my ideas operationally, make sure that they can be facilitated. And then sometimes what we do is we take a great idea, we see it fail, and then we, instead of scrapping it, we try and manipulate the idea to work within the model that might work. And I think food is so interesting because, like, recently, I just did, I won't name any names, but I did a brunch event at another restaurant here in Toronto, because a lot of people have been reaching out about, like, because we were so well known for our brunches.
Right.
So we went there, and then when we started to bring the gear inside their kitchen, my chef looks at me and goes, this kitchen's just not designed to facilitate the brunch that you and I are about to do.
Right.
And you could just tell immediately we had to, on the fly, adapt the kitchen. And I'm only using that example because it's exactly what you said. Sometimes you need to have, if you only have an assembly line, you're just running the numbers at that point. And you never become anything of note. You're just churning out, you know, roast beef sandwiches.
Yep.
You need to have the other side. I actually would argue that the money is made in the concept car, because the concept car is what drives the assembly line.
Sure. Yeah.
And that is where the new business will come in. Assembly line takes care of existing business, you know, and now I'm always looking at what other relationship can we leverage? What other, is there a new piece of tech out there that would work really well? And, you know, I've gone after great ideas. There's been so many things that we've seen that were great ideas, but just failed to execute. So then you just get rid of them.
Yeah. Very cool. That's all I had.
Cool.
Amazing.
Dude.
That's it. You can find Think, Do, Say wherever you buy books. And if you're more of a listener, Think, Do, Say is also available as an audiobook through Audible and Amazon. You can hear more interviews from Think, Do, Say at thinkdosay.com. And if you're already listening to the book in audio form, then just go back.